This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
Hello, if you're hearing my voice right now, then you have stumbled onto the podcast where real stories of professional criminal profilers are told by professional assholes. Welcome to Profiling Pain. All right, guys, welcome back to the third episode of Profiling Pain. It's been a while. I know we had a long vacation because of the holidays and everything else going on. And, I got sick last week, so it was supposed to come out sooner, and it just didn't happen. I was running 102.5 as an adult, which sounds scary as shit to me, but I still put up the Christmas lights, so go me.
You were briefly afflicted, but you soldiered through, sir. Very proud of you.
So, again, the numbers have been starting to climb. We're very thankful for that. So, you know,
Grande gracias now?
Sure.
Yeah.
Grande gracias. Anyway, so thank you guys so much for all the love we've been seeing online and everything else. I mean, it's shooting through the charts. Again, thank you to Aja Radio for picking us up and doing anything that you're doing for us. I mean, we're on Spotify, we're on Breaker, we're on iHeartRadio. We're all over the damn place now.
In the words of Pac, you all appreciate it.
Yeah, iTunes. And those iTunes reviews are very important. But before we get started, the other sultry voice you're hearing right now is it's my chicken from another mister. It's my ginger companion.
I'm a daywalker, sir. Get it right.
It's my favorite finger. Go ahead, Fuego. Introduce yourself.
What's up, y'all? I mean, Fuego here of various institutions, but most notably the horror show.
There you go.
And Chiron. What am I saying? Come on now.
And, of course, it's me, your host, Chris Payne. So real quick before we get started, I want to say thank you very much to there's two people in particular for the last couple weeks that have been pushing me, trying to keep my work ethic up. And so thank you to Michael Ice and Cameron Dietz. I used your fucking names. Apologize if you guys didn't want that. But thank you guys so much for giving me so much shit about getting this thing done.
I just physically pushed him also, by the way.
He did physically push me.
I didn't do a very good job.
But, and Fuego's been really amped to get this going, too. So that's going to be the staple. You guys are going to hear Chris Payne and Fuego, I mean, all the time on this thing. So I think this is going to be – unfortunately, for you Mahalo fans out there, you're probably going to hear him
– Hey, sorry.
You're probably gonna hear him in and out anyway. They're noisy and
bit to the old in out.
That's right. So we're actually recording this from what would you call this? The Chiron cage.
Yeah, the Chiron cavern, the Chiron cave. I don't know.
Yeah,
it is kind of a cage because it's very small here in our recording little room of sorts.
It's nice.
So Casa Calahante, as I used to call it. Yeah. I haven't used that name in a while, but
So we're actually recording where we are going to be recording our album. So we got that going on. Like we mentioned. Every time we are a band, we do music. So I'm even entertaining the idea of throwing up a couple songs like at the end of episodes. If you guys are interested, you know, email us at santartainment@gmail.com or hit us up on the Facebook at facebook.com/Chiron Band AZ.
Santar spelled with a C. That's just right. Just like Chiron.
All over Reverb Nation, same thing, Chiron Band AZ. So sorry for the break. And also a big
guys.
A big apology for the sound quality of the last episode. I've been telling everybody, if you pretend you're in a bar, it sounds legit. So
it was a bad mic cable, as we found out after recording the whole thing. But we tested our levels this time, so we are hopefully sounding proper.
Yeah, we really don't do too much editing. We want you guys to have like the full-fledged thing. And so due to not doing that, you guys got the full-fledged issue. So
enjoy.
But thank you guys
very
much.
But more subscribers came. So
that's right. Yeah, it came. December has actually been a really good month for us so far.
Yeah. So all of your research paying off, sir.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So last.
This man has books of notes. Like, seriously, books worth.
So the last episode at the end, we were talking about today's case, which is Richard Chase, the Vampire of Sacramento. And
I like fangers.
Yeah. So that's one of the reasons why I picked this one for you. Yeah. But it's actually a very, very. Dark episode. We're gonna try to keep it as lighthearted as possible, but there's gonna be
you gave me a preview, and it sounded pretty ferocious, man.
Yeah, there's gonna be a disclaimer, so listen for the disclaimer. But
welcome to the disclaimer. That's right, the disclaimer.
That's anyway. Right. So this episode, we're gonna be cranking to 11. So
we always try to, though.
Yeah, but I'll give you a fair warning. I'll give you about a 10 second head start to turn it off if you need to. So Richard Chase, the Vampire of Sacramento. So here we go. All right, so he was an American serial killer who killed six people.
Only six?
The way he did it. So in the span of a month in California, his obsession with drinking blood and eating the organs of his victims earned him the title of, you know, the Vampire of Sacramento. So here we go. We're going to go into his early years. So in the early years, Richard Chase, born Richard Trenton Chase, May 23rd of 1950. So basic instructional guide for a serial killer. He had a overly strict parents. I mean, nothing out of the norm for the 50s and 60s, really. But they ended up splitting. There was a lot of turmoil in the relationship. They ended up getting a divorce. And during the divorce trials, the argument was who's going to take him, but not because either one of them really wanted him.
I was going to say, they're like, let's both wash our hands of this creature we created together.
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, you read some things, they say that he had an abusive father. You read other things, they said that he had a 1960s father, which I think are two of the same.
Hippie?
Yeah. So eventually he turned into a fire starter, mutilating animals by the age of 10.
Prodigy wasn't even around yet.
Wetting the bed. So this is going to be an educational episode. This is the McDonald Triad. He showed every sign of the McDonald Triad, which, if you don't know what that is, it's
a triple-double. It's three pieces of cheese.
It's the three key signs of a serial killer. So you have fire starting, wetting the bed, and animal mutilation.
I wonder why wetting the bed. That's the only one that seems kind of like so many kids wet their beds.
Yeah, it's not very fair. I mean, my kid wets the bed still. That's why we don't let him drink water after 7 p.m. anymore.
Right under the bus, right under the bed, because it seeps through, you know.
But realistically, it's the animal mutilation that really, I'd say, pinpoints what they're going to do later in the future.
I totally burned stuff as a kid. I did not kill small animals.
No, I started fires all the damn time.
Although I did turn into a fanger. Anyway.
So by 10, like I said, he was mutilating animals. Neighbors were finding their cats buried in their yard, all kinds of shit. Like, yeah, I mean, he was a little over the top with his animal mutilation. It wasn't normal, like, tie a fire, you know, firecracker to a dog's tail or shove a firecracker.
That's normal?
So anyway. Yeah,
silence. I just killed ants, man, with magnifying glasses. That's about as far as I went.
I am your god now. Yes. So, but into his teens, he was already drinking heavily, and he was smoking the devil's leaf.
Mary J. Wanna?
Yeah, I don't think he's really out of the norm for a teenager, especially in the 60s. You know, in the 60s,
Devil grass.
Yeah, people were, doing LSD by 15. I mean, like, one of the things, I couldn't remember the name of it last episode.
Now they're
episode.
Smoking meth at 12. It's come on.
Shit. So scary. I couldn't, dude, their parents are prescribing meth to these kids. Adderall, just saying.
Yeah.
No, but, so in the 60s
just
and the
saying.
70s. I mean, I wanted to talk about it in the 50s last episode, but I had mentioned I couldn't remember the name of the conspiracy theory, which isn't a conspiracy theory, it's a proven thing. MK Ultra. I've been trying to figure out that name forever. MK Ultra. You ever heard of MK Ultra?
It was on the Super Nintendo. It had all the characters, and I could play Smoke and Noob Saibot.
Stranger Things is huge right now. Everybody's obsessed with Stranger Things. So,
season 3 coming next year.
Right. So the mom was part of the MK Ultra program where they would actually, this is a true story, they would actually pump people full of psychedelics, LSD, to see the effects, stuff like that, and leave them in, like, the solitary chambers and stuff like that.
You know, that's what Firestarter, the Stephen King book, was about, right?
Okay.
It was experimental psychedelic drugs, and then that's how Charlie gets the, you know, kind of powers and stuff. Anyway,
so
Cy King, hail to Stephen King.
What they were doing was they were trying to actually turn people into an empaths and, like, give them, psychological powers.
Psychokinesis and stuff like
that.
And
that was how they were going to battle the Russians, because supposedly Russians were doing the same thing.
Supposedly.
Honestly,
they probably were.
Oh, dude, for sure. But, I mean, if you look at, like, I know we're getting off topic for a second, but if you look at, like, the 1940s and all the experimentations that the Nazis were doing in, like, Japan, holy shit.
See, Overlord. Overlord's good.
Yeah, Japan was doing all kinds of crazy experiments, worse than the Nazis were, if you could believe it.
Worse than trying to crossbreed, like having dogs, like, banging women to see what sort of weird spawn would occur and stuff.
Yeah, I can't remember. It was called,
Well, the Japanese, they got their hentai. They're into some weird shit, man. I mean,
and plus their genitals are blurry. I don't know how that happens.
We were talking about that earlier.
So anyway, but by his teens, he was actually showing absolutely no shame for his acts. So he had absolutely no empathy. So that's another sign of a future serial killer.
Well, and now, that's also parents not being around to hopefully curb that sort of behavior
when they
see it. Broken home is the classic case when that stuff goes ignored, because they're not that you don't have a dedicated two parent, whether it's two men, two women, whatever. I mean, the more parents, the better. The more role models, the better for troubled children.
That was also the era of denial. There's nothing wrong with my kid. There's nothing wrong with my kid. There's nothing wrong with my kid.
Yeah, because it's a reflection on you.
And
you as a parent, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you think that yourself, right?
And nowadays, every kid's on all kinds of fucking meds. So
that's the go-to. I mean, I still remember my youngest brother. He was unruly in class. They're like, I think I talked about this on the first episode of the show. Just give him drugs, you know? We don't want to deal with him.
Yeah.
He's ADHD, whatever. And my parents were like, nope. We just have a little asshole of a son.
Yeah, diagnosing kids at bipolar when they're seven. Like, it's crazy. So, much like the Columbine shooters, he wasn't an outcast in school or anything like that. He actually dated a lot of women and was very popular. Plus,
no Arch Bushmaster or anything, but no,
but in high school he was also the weed hookup, so I'm sure he had a lot of friends. So, you know, he dated several girls throughout high school. One actually ended up in an interview after the entire case, explaining that he was unable to perform in the bedroom. Now, we're gonna cover a lot of serial killers, and let me tell you that a man's flaccid penis is the key to a lot of bloodshed. Like, I don't know why. But there's a lot
of... able to get it up.
Like Albert Fish.
There's drugs for that.
Yeah, you can... Well, maybe not in the 70s, but you can go down the line. I think they had a... According to Austin Powers, they had a pump, but it's not his bag. But they had a...
It's not mine.
But yeah, a flaccid penis causes a lot of damage. So his little soldier couldn't...
The world over, I would imagine.
Yeah. So obviously, as a young man, this bothered him a great deal. So thinking he may be suffering from a mental illness, he diagnosed himself.
Okay? Well, and then they actually isn't that typical with like ED and stuff where people are like, yeah, you probably have some mental shit going on, and which is why you can't like get it up.
So at 18, on his own, like, you know, his own terms, he actually decided to visit a psychologist. He learned that a root cause of his impotence might be repressed anger from his childhood or his dad, or, you know what I mean? So the psychologist thought that he had a major problem but did not have him committed at the time. You know, between he didn't really mention the animal mutilation or anything else like that. It was just all the erection and stuff like that. So after moving out of his parents' house, he actually went to junior college for a while. And what they said in junior college is that they're like, so how was he as a student? He wasn't a very impressive student. That's about all they had to say about him. But he actually
I'm sure they get a lot of those in junior college.
Yeah, but he did, however, have two female roommates while he was in junior college, and so he's on his own, essentially. You know, and his odd behavior started to actually grow more severe. Even close friends of his being thrown off by his behavior. So, pretty much his drug use worsened, and roommates actually reported on multiple occasions during parties that he would just lay on the ground and start shaking and then get up and walk away. He would just lay on the ground, pretend to convulse, get up and just walk away.
So he was pretending. He wasn't actually like having a seizure or
something. And there was a couple occasions where he would actually just come and sit down on the couch with everybody, stark naked, just sitting there naked. Like, with absolutely no reasoning.
So he was like Louis C.K. or whatever his
name is. Essentially. One time, he actually nailed his closet door shut and his bedroom door shut, explaining that Nazis were coming to take his blood from him. Like, he was losing his fucking mind.
He's getting there.
Yeah, so we're going to move on a little bit. So afterwards, he kind of, you know, later on, he started becoming obsessed with any sign that something was wrong with himself. And it was only increasing even more into his adulthood. So his roommates actually left in the middle of the night. They were like, we can't deal with this shit anymore. They were like afraid of him. So they're like, okay, so we just bounced out. So when he couldn't really cover his rent anymore, so he ended up moving back into his mom's house. And his parents couldn't deal with his shit because he was just too fucking weird. You know, and
mom had like remarried presumably or something.
No,
or?
she was still single. Like they, and you know, and she would still talk to the dad periodically about his behavior. So they actually ended up sending. He actually mutilated his mom's cat, and she was like, "All right, you need to go ahead and just go to your grandmother's now. I'm not going to deal with your shit." So while living with his grandmother,
that was what broke the cat's back and said,
So he actually ended up walking into an emergency room looking for the person who stole his pulmonary artery, shouting, "Who stole my artery?"
I was going to eat that myself.
Yeah, he also was complaining a lot about his bones were coming out through the back of his head, and that his stomach was put in backwards, and that his heart often just stopped beating at times. So, although he thought that he might, he got committed at that point in the hospital, just in the regular hospital, and he thought that he might actually, they thought, sorry, that he might actually be suffering from a drug-induced toxic psychosis. So he was put under observation for 72 hours, and then it was recommended that he stay, but they gave him permission to leave whenever he wanted, and he just walked the fuck out. He was like, well,
acid is heavy, man. I mean, I only know from experience a handful of times.
And during all this time, he's actually an acid dealer. Like, that's how he's making his little bit of money. He was actually
to the mushies, man. Grown in the ground, no toxic chemicals.
So after all this, he kind of submersed himself into hypochondria and drug abuse. He was 5'11" and only weighed 145 pounds.
Oof.
like, he got obsessed with his drugs and just, he wouldn't eat anything. He started becoming...
Whittled away.
You know, not to jump the gun, but he kind of became obsessed with blood. And I'm going to get into what that issue is actually called. This is going to be kind of an educational episode, I guess. So anyway, 145 pounds, all right? He was unable to maintain a job or any form of normality. So he moved back in with his mother again for a while. His father made him move out and actually start paying rent on an apartment for him because it was too much for the mom to handle. The dad didn't want him. The grandmother couldn't do it anymore. So his father actually went and got him his own apartment in Sacramento. There, go live here. Go do this. And
still, that feels like enabling a situation where there's so many other things that need to be addressed. It's come on now.
Yeah, so his main issue is that he thought that he had a lack of blood. Like, that's why he thought that he couldn't
personally
get an erection.
Needed more.
Yeah, so he thought that his heart wouldn't beat. He thought that he couldn't
get
an erection.
Well, they say that all, I mean, heart disease and all kinds of different stuff, you know, it all ties in with, you know, getting your heart on.
Yeah, so while living...
Need blood down there, peoples.
Yeah, so while living on his own, in order to get the blood that he so required, he actually started taking daily trips to a rabbit farm nearby and buying rabbits like the bucket load, no pun intended. You know what I mean? Like, because what he would do is he had rabbit cages throughout his whole fucking apartment. He would actually take these rabbits, decapitate them, drain them of their blood, cut open their stomachs, take the entrails and all their guts and put them inside of a blender. And he would blend them up and drink
protein shakes. Interesting.
Like, yeah.
Was he reading Watership Down at the time? Even been released yet? I can't remember.
So not reading. He was okay. So he had a lot of anatomy books. Mm-hmm. He read a lot on human anatomy.
Oh, if he's like going for specific organs and whatnot, of course. Yeah. He's looking at that.
His main obsession was television. He would just like.
He's like a lot of other people then.
He would get all drunk on blood, do some LSD, and sit there and watch TV. So. The main reason for his bloodlust.
Did he like his daytime soap operas? Did he like the news talk? Did he?
This is probably, I'd say, this is the very early 70s. So who? I mean, Sanford and Son. What was on in the 70s? Oof. MASH.
They're coming to get me, Mom. Anyway,
so I'm coming to join you. The whole reason he got obsessed with the blood so much is that he actually thought that his heart was shrinking and disappearing from his body. He once. So,
got to get more blood in there, make it beef back up. It's like a muscle.
So later on, what he gets diagnosed with, and I'll explain it right now, is with the heart shrinking and thinking he needs more blood, that's called Cotard delusion. And we've talked about this before for songs.
Yeah.
Where Cotard delusion is where you actually have the belief that you're decaying from the inside and that vital organs or limbs are getting ready to go away. You think you're a walking corpse.
Yeah, I've been thinking that for a while.
Yeah, so he has that mixed with what's called Renfield syndrome, which is actually based off of a book character. I can't remember the name. But Renfield syndrome actually comes in three stages. The first stage is you get obsessed with your own blood. So you're drinking your own blood whenever you get a cut or anything else like that, trying to keep your blood in your body. The second stage, you switch to zoology. You're draining animal blood.
Okay. I know what the end game is then.
Cannibalism. Exactly. Right now, he's in stage two, but he had a really bad bout of Renfield syndrome. So
maybe he was trying to like not go over that edge. Maybe he was trying not to cross that line. He was like, maybe just animals are going to be enough for me.
He moves into larger animals. So on a specific rabbit occasion, his dad shows up to play cards with him. His dad would show up monthly for visits and just talk with
him.
He's
like, oh, great collection of rabbit heads you got there,
right.
Son.
So his dad would show up and they'd just play cards. I can't imagine what rummy, maybe. I don't know. But he noticed
go
that
fish.
He noticed that Chase
have enough blood.
Was very, very pale. Like he looked very, very sickly. And he goes, what's going on? He goes, oh, I think I got a bad rabbit. He goes, what, a bad rabbit? Because he noticed all the cages and the blood everywhere. He's like, what do you mean a bad rabbit? And of course, you know, I mean, 60s, 70s, hunting is a big thing.
Everybody, people eat rabbits. Rabbit's good.
So. Right, exactly. So he goes, what do you mean you got a bad rabbit? I guess Chase believed that battery acid was dripping from the walls and somehow tainted some rabbit blood. So he ate a bad rabbit, and then to make up for it, injected rabbit blood directly into his veins.
Now that is where we could see some big problems.
That is, yeah. So his father immediately took him to the hospital, where once again...
Ingestion is one thing. Intravenous is a totally different story.
So once again, he was committed into the hospital. So he ended up actually getting blood poisoning from the rabbit blood. And then after thinking he drank bad blood and the whole thing or else like that. So
no battery acid.
Finally.
He was just.
No, he was just crazy.
He's nuts. Okay.
So finally he was actually committed to a real mental institution. Now he escaped 2 days later by running out the front door. So they caught him and was transferred to a more secure facility. So while there, this is where he actually earned the name Dracula. So only ever talking about blood and animal mutilation and ordering So he's only talking about blood and animal mutilation the entire time he's in there. So that's why they ended up getting the name Dracula, blah, blah, blah. But he, an orderly, this is a funny story, an orderly actually caught him in his room with a bunch of decapitated pigeons. Hmm. And he had blood and pigeon feathers all over his face. And the orderly goes, "What happened here?" And now Richard Chase actually had a really high voice for a male. And his response was, "I cut myself shaving." Right. Right.
What were you using, sir?
with feathers all over his damn face. Like, it was, yeah.
So they're just smiling and nodding, and they're like, "Yeah, you're where you need to be."
Yeah. So they went into his room. All the pigeons were missing heads. He cut himself shaving. So he went up. He was there for 4 months. He went up in front
pigeons.
Of He went up in front of the board multiple times. And his own psychiatrist actually said, "Well, right now he's not really a hazard to himself or anyone else. It's just he's just kind of doing weird things with animals." And in the 70s, there was a bunch of weird hippies walking around doing weird shit constantly. So they couldn't hold him for being weird. Yeah. And his psychiatrist actually stood firm on him getting out. What happened was his mom signed the release paper saying that she'll keep him under her supervision, and they prescribed him meds at the time. Now, while he's living with his mother, his mom decided that she wanted to wean him off the meds. She didn't like him walking around zombified. And it goes into that whole denial thing.
It tends to do that to people.
Yeah, so that goes off the whole denial thing. "Oh, my son is fine. My son is fine. My son is fine. My son is fine." So he was actually released September 29th in 1976. On Christmas that year, actually, right around Christmas that year, having to renew their conservatorship annually, his mom never renewed it, never even tried, just weaned him off the meds, got him doing whatever he wants. So at one point, Chase actually graduated to cats and dogs and took his mother's dog, and this is how he ended up back in his own apartment again. Mm. He took his mother's dog, shot the dog in the head, and drained the blood all over his own face. Now, the mom left the blood portion out, but explained to the dad that he had mutilated the dog, you know, and the dad was like...
No details. We don't want to say how messed up our kid is.
Yeah, and the dad was like, "Put him back in his apartment. Just get rid of the kid. Just put him back. You know, he's fine when he's on his own. He's fine
so
when
much
he's on
shuffling
his own.
Around here, though, as opposed to, like, actually addressing the issue, man, and that's obviously how it continued to get worse, which is
so
crazy.
So when he got back into his own apartment, he was actually obsessed with larger animals now. Rabbits didn't quite have the amount of blood that he needed. So he started
More cats, going, obviously, if we're going for dogs, unless they're, like, you know, little yip-yippers or
right.
something.
So he actually ended up getting 86th from a lot of animal shelters because they noticed how many he was taking. And they were like, and the entire time, this guy is constantly covered in blood. He's always, but it's, I mean, it's brown at this point because it's dry.
Yeah,
but
it's dry and flaking.
He's always covered in something, and he was never like a mysterious character because I guess at the
Despite
time
that,
well, I guess at the time, like seeing dirty hippies walking around was like a normal thing. You're talking the 70s, you know what I mean? It wasn't anything too out of the norm. He was just an odd guy. They just labeled him an odd guy. But he ended up getting 86, and there's talks that when he would enter animal shelters, dogs on scent would just like rear back from them. They would hide from them.
I would imagine those like pheromones, they are tough to wash off, especially if you're dirty and the flaking crap and you're not washing yourself
and
properly.
And
like a good dirty habit.
Oh, yeah, and depending on what book you read, they'll tell you like, "Oh, they could sense the evil on them." I think the blood too. Yeah.
No.
So August 3rd, 1977, off his meds and living alone, tribal police were called out after reports of an abandoned car being seen near Pyramid Lake on Walker River Reservation in Nevada. So police inspect the abandoned vehicle. It's a 1966 Ford Ranchero with a bumper sticker that said, "I'd rather be flying." So officers checked the vehicle, and they found a bucket filled with blood and a liver resting in it. Also a loaded 30-30 rifle and a 22 rifle, both also covered in blood, and also a stack of blood-soaked clothes and some blood-soaked tennis shoes. So surveying the surrounding area with binoculars to see if they could see anything lying around, they found Richard a half mile away, perched naked on a giant rock, just sitting there in blood.
Wow.
So the cops approach, and he runs off.
Naked carry status, just like right. kind of enjoying the outdoors.
So after they catch him, they ask where the blood came from, and he just says, "It came from inside me." Like, okay, so it turns out that the liver was actually from a cow. So no crazy now.
I was going to ask if it was a human organ at this point. Yeah.
Right, but it was a cow.
We've crossed over.
And the craziest part is they just let him go. The only arrest that he had throughout his history before finally getting caught was a weed possession and a unregistered gun possession. That was his only arrest.
Hmm. And the gun possession at that time, slap on the wrist. I mean, depending on your state, obviously. But,
right.
Yeah.
And
we're in the wild, wild west in Arizona, man. I mean, they don't give a crap.
Still. And the tribal police actually just let him go. They're like, "We can't arrest him for being weird."
Hmm.
Right, like...
They're like, he's on some peyote or something.
Yeah, they just let him go. Whatever. Like, it's just a naked, dirty hippie covered in cow blood. Let him go. So...
Once again, just ignoring the problem. Just wash your hands of it.
And it would actually be 4 months later that he would actually commit his first real murder.
He was getting close based on the buildup that you're mentioning
here. The animal size, the amount of blood that he's requiring, everything else like that. So everything,
he's working up to it.
Yeah, everything has a build. So his first murder attempt actually came on December 27th, 2 days after Christmas in 1977. So Dorothy Polensky, doing her dishes at 6:30 p.m., heard a loud pop, breaking glass, and a hot streak pass just above her head, hitting the bun that she had tightly above her hair, and then smacking into the cabinet behind her. She turns, looks out the window, and she just sees Richard Chase hopping a fence. So he's getting more brazen.
Well, obviously, if he's doing it at 6:30 at night, too. I mean, like, God.
Well, all of his murders will actually happen in the middle of the day. So
bold, man. Bold as love.
So we're getting into...
different kind of love, though.
I'm going to explain shortly the difference between spree killer and serial killer, but this man was kind of a hybrid. Hmm. He was eventually...
Well, because, like, serial killer is done over a lengthy period of time, right? Whereas spree killer, obviously, hence the term, it's like, you want to get your load off all at once, and so just boom, 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 boom kind of thing, right?
Exactly. So speculation on the sudden escalation is because his parents wouldn't let him come to Christmas, actually. He was being too weird for them. So
there's always a breaking point, right? There's something that pushes you off the edge, and it's usually not necessarily orchestrated by you. It's like everyone has that breaking point kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. So this is right after I said he took his mother's cat, shot it, and did the whole blood thing. So
cat or the dog? Because I know he.
It was actually his mother's cat. Yeah, I mixed up a couple things, but it was actually his mother's cat, not his mother's dog. That's kind of what made them go like, "You need to just stay gone now." And at this point, actually. Leading up to the murders, he started dressing normal and coming over to his parents' house and acting like everything's fine. He never mentioned blood. He was trying to keep up this normal persona all of a sudden.
But that's because he had more to hide at that point.
But only for his parents is the strange part. He would walk around dirty, drudgy the whole time.
Well, they were the ones paying the bills, though, right? So,
yeah, exactly.
Obviously. So, maintain that face.
Yeah, so leading up to the murder, all right? So December 28th, in his Ford Ranchero, he hit the streets after this first attempt, obviously. So... this is December 28th now, the next day.
So did she, like, call authorities on him and he escaped or whatever? Like,
Because
you said this was the first attempt.
So I'm kind of, like, just going to give you the crimes. And then the next episode, when I talk about who's not even actually the profiler, it's a very interesting case. When I talk about the hero, R. Van Helsing, I guess, that catches the vampire, right? I'll give you the rundown of what the investigation actually consisted of and how many times the cops were called. But for this one, I'm just going to give you him, his version of the story.
And if I see Van Helsing,
so December 28th,
I cannot.
The next day in his Ford Ranchero, he hit the streets of Sacramento and found his first actual murder victim, all right, about a mile from his apartment. All this shit happened about a mile from his apartment. That's why it just seemed... Anyway.
Wow. I mean, you would think venturing far, somebody would have something plotted a little bit.
Well,
back to the insanity that was taking hold.
Like I said, that time that he was actually, committed, he got diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia. So you mix that with Renfield and Cotard. And the thing with schizophrenics is that when they go to do something, it's all about patterns. There's got to be something that they see, and we'll see where that comes into play, actually.
Yeah, it's about good numbers, good cycles, things like that. Yeah.
Exactly. So about a mile from his apartment, he spotted a 51-year-old Ambrose. Ambrose Griffin was the man's name. Okay, he was unloading groceries from his car. His wife later reported hearing two loud bangs and then turned around to see her husband go limp on the ground. And now Ambrose is actually – the first shot actually missed – but the second shot got him right in the chest. Now, he's holding his chest saying, I've been shot. But because women are always right, his wife was proclaiming, he's having a heart attack. And the man is yelling, I've been shot. And she's screaming, he's having a heart attack. Like, even in the man's final breaths, the wife had to be right. And he's yelling that he was shot.
Touching that argument with a 10-foot pole.
he actually fled the scene. But that was his first real, boom, hit.
Yeah.
All right, so proclaiming he had a heart attack. Now, no leads actually came from the shooting, even with attempts of hypnotizing. So in the 60s and the 70s...
They went that far?
Well, that was actually a big thing. If you go back and look at as many crimes as I've looked at, in the 1970s, they would try to hypnotize so many witnesses. But even with hypnotizing one of the witnesses, which was, I think, an 11-year-old boy...
Would they say it was a hip thing to do at the time?
Nice.
Ah.
It wouldn't be until his arrest that they actually knew it was him that did it. So January 23rd of 1978. So now we're what?
We're many years. We're like almost a whole decade into just the buildup, though, I feel like.
Well, so we went through his childhood in the 60s and everything else like that.
Yeah.
But all of his like
tracing actual, the steps.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
And it was a lot of failures in a lot of different directions. I mean, the psychiatrist, his parents, like honestly, with especially with what we're going to describe here shortly, there is no sympathy for this man whatsoever. But what makes me the most angry is all the signs were there. And I understand the 60s and the 70s and the systems were different then. But there were so many signs. There were so many times where, I mean, he even went.
Red flags like a mofo, yo.
He even went in and said himself that he wasn't feeling well. You know what I mean? Like, he tried to turn himself in. Well, not turn himself in, but, like, you know, commit himself.
Yeah.
And he was
that means
turn,
he was slightly cognizant of the way the process was going. Like, he's like, I don't feel right. There's something wrong with me. Please
feels
help
like,
me.
It almost feels like at every turn he was just getting validation.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing wrong with me. So moving on. So January 23rd of 1978, it was time to claim his first actual blood victim. Okay? This is where we're going to start getting into blood. Now, this part, it gets a little gruesome. It's nothing compared to the next one, but I'm going to give you this one. I'm
so
only
this is another disclaimer.
So real quick, I'm going to go into detail. I'm going to try not to go into too much because this isn't murder porn. This is just educational.
I
so
want to hear some of it, though.
You're going to. So right now, I'm going to give you 10 seconds to go ahead and either cut to the next episode where it's not going to be quite as bloody, or hold out for 5 minutes, and then we're going to get into more funny stuff, and then it'll be another disclaimer. So go ahead, 10 seconds.
Okay, we don't need to wait.
Perfect.
By 10. Yeah.
I like it. All right. So now, beginning at 2909 Burney Street, he walked up to a house belonging to Gene Layton, tried all doors, eventually coming to the back door where Gene was actually staring out. She came face-to-face with Richard. The two just stared at each other. Then Richard just walked away, lighting a cigarette. Now, down the street, he walked into the home of Robert and Barbara Edwards. The doors weren't locked, and Chase would say later that he wouldn't enter a locked home because he felt that he wasn't welcome. What does that sound like?
You must be invited in. You're a vampire.
Very vampire-esque qualities. Now, Robert and Barbara came home from grocery shopping to find Chase holding a few things. He was holding a family heirloom dagger, like all kinds of weird random shit you wouldn't think of that people would have in their house. But I mean, we all have weird shit too.
He's so coming to get you, Bob.
He's trying to rob the place. Now, while they're chasing him around the house and trying to chase him out, he's screaming the whole time. I was just taking a shortcut. Like they're chasing him around. Right, they're chasing him around the damn house.
I was just going through your house because it was like going through your house was the quickest way.
So they finally get him out of the house, and then they go to check around the house to see what's missing, what's moved. They make it to their baby's room, and he had actually opened up all the baby's drawers, peed all over the baby's clothes, and took a fat deuce right in the crib, right in the center of the crib.
Marking his territory.
Yeah, that's some Albert Fish shit. That might be another episode. But if you want to do some quick research, Albert Fish, holy shit. Now,
no pun intended.
Now, after Richard left the house, he headed to a store because his favorite was orange soda, where he ran into an old high school friend of his, Nancy Holden. Now, Chase walked up to her, and the first thing out of his mouth was, "Were you on the motorcycle when Kurt was killed? Because that'd be fucking awesome." Now, she had actually dated Kurt in high school. Kurt did die in a motorcycle accident, but she was looking at him like, "Who the fuck is this?" And then she finally looked at him and realized that it was actually Richard from high school. But she didn't really recognize him at first because he was super skinny, dirty, smelt. And at the entire time this was all going on, he was wearing a bright orange ski parka covered in dry blood. Mm. But they just looked at it as brown stains. So everybody kind of assumed it was fecal matter, actually.
Yeah, they thought it was shite.
Right. So he then asked her for a ride and attempted to actually climb into the car with her. But before he could, she locked the doors and drove the fuck off. Now, the entire time this is happening, he has a .22 pistol and a shoulder holster on him. Right, so he's armed the entire time. And he bought that pistol for like $69. He actually asked his
mom. Which was a decent amount of money back then.
He actually asked his mom to go get him the shoulder holster. She wouldn't. So he just ran into a thrift store, stole it, and ran out. So right. So now, here we go, guys. This is cranking up to 11.
Now we're getting there.
Here we go. So at 2360 Tioga Way.
This is what you've been waiting for.
The same night, he came across a blue van parked in the driveway. Now, there's speculation that he might have actually seen the same van at the store that he was at because schizophrenics, like I said, look for patterns. He would actually say later that he recognized the van. So, the same van at the store and happened to see it in the home. Now, Teresa Wallen, okay, walking to her door while just outside, Chase was actually placing a bullet casing in her mailbox. Now,
I wonder why.
Yeah. Now, carrying his .22 and preparing to enter the home, Teresa was actually walking out the front door with two bags of garbage she was getting ready to toss out. He met her there. She found Chase standing there, pointing the pistol. She dropped the bags, put her hands up to defend herself, and he fired. The first bullet entered her palm, traveled up her arm, and exited her elbow, actually cutting the side of her neck.
Wow.
The second shot, after she dropped, was 6 inches away from her temple, which, honestly, with what I'm about to describe next, I would say is a mercy killing. Now, he has a thing for killing quickly. He is what you would call a product killer. He wants nothing to do with the actual killing. That would be a product killer. A product killer. A process killer is somebody who enjoys the actual act of the murder.
So they try to dry it out, and it's more torture, of a torturous
stuff like that.
Aspect.
Yeah, exactly. Ugh. Now, a
product
killer.
Not a fan
killer,
of the torture porn, yeah.
No. A product killer is somebody who actually kills people to get what he wants out of it at the end. So it's anything that happens to do with the person itself is usually post-mortem, or somebody who will kill somebody to get what they have. It's just a product killing. So he is the definition of a product killer. Because
so product versus process.
Exactly.
It just depends on how quickly you want to get to the end game. I mean, I guess there's some people who they're more just fascinated by what happens after the death, and then there's others who are more fascinated with the process leading up to ending it eventually. Ugh.
And
anyway,
you know, I mean, product killers are bad, but I don't want to say there's a silver lining, but what happens post-mortem is post-mortem. There's no torture. You know, it's
a crimson lining.
Yeah, well put. So he dragged her body, all right, into her room, leaving a streak of blood, okay? He laid her down on the bed. Then he grabbed a knife from the kitchen and an empty yogurt cup that actually fell out of the garbage when she dropped it. So very quickly, he removed her left nipple. Then he cut the torso just beneath the sternum, pulled out the spleen and the rest of the entrails, leaving only the kidneys inside. Then he went to the bathroom with the yogurt, slammed it like a shooter, and then covered himself in what was left of the blood and drank what he couldn't get out of the yogurt container. After all this, he had gone outside, okay, retrieved a handful of dog feces, came back in, and put it into the victim's mouth. Yeah, that's just the ultimate, like, desecration, you know? So, entrails, yogurt thing. I'm going to get into every murder scene actually has
Chris
rings.
Can tell I'm getting a little uncomfortable hearing
it
about
gets,
this.
It gets worse. Dude.
Great. I'm glad you forewarned me.
So it gets worse. So real quick, to cover crime scene, at every crime scene there's bloody footprints and there was rings in the ground. We'll cover what that is later. If you can guess what the rings are, it's a bucket. He would find a bucket. Okay. So anyway. Now this is the worst part. The husband comes home to find her like this. Like I said, everything happens like in the middle of the day. The husband actually came home to find his wife like this, and it turns out that she was 6 weeks pregnant.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So.
Winner.
Yeah.
Winners. Jeez.
So.
Anyway.
All right. Now, he got back to his apartment shortly after that murder, and then he just sat there and watched TV the rest of the day.
Was he on psychedelic drugs?
Right. Now, 2 days later, after this murder, a puppy was actually found killed and mutilated close to the Wallens' home. Now, a strange man was reported with dingy, stringy hair driving a Ranchero, had actually bought two puppies from a family on the 25th of that month. They found one of the puppies that they didn't sell to this man dead from their litter, and he was shot in the head with a .22, and all his entrails were gouged out. Like, I can't even describe to you how much this animal is mutilated. Now, the only reason I'm bringing up an animal murder after a human murder is because it ties into how he was tracked down. I mean, I'm not saying that by no means should animals be killed or mutilated like that at all, but
unless you're eating them, I mean.
Yeah. So now, January 27th, 1978 would be his 1978 would be his next round of murders, but January 24th is how he may have actually found the house. Now, actually, I feel like I might have screwed up my timeline here, but I'll fix it next episode. We're
the
go
expert,
here.
Sir.
Yeah, sorry. But this would be his next round of murders. January 24th may have been how he found the house. Now, what he would do, actually, is he would go house to house asking for old issues of Mad Magazine and old issues of Cosmo. He would just go door to door asking for old issues.
Interesting dichotomy there between those two publications.
Yeah, it's actually, yeah, it's really, really strange how he would do. So
I want to laugh and I want to, like, you know, pretty myself up.
Like, I mean, and it was all old back issues too. Like, that's the strangest way to track down. I don't know. It's the dude's a schizo. I don't know how else to explain. It's very crazy. So here we go. So now if you're back in from the last one, I'm gonna get into how bad this actually gets. So January 27th, 1978. So this is where we actually...
This is victim number two.
This is victims three, four, five, and six. Like I said, he's a spree killer. He's the epitome of a spree killer and a serial killer. So what covers him as a serial killer is later on when they actually investigate his house, he had dates marked. That was it. He had pre-planned dates, but he had nothing else planned.
That's the whole premeditated aspect.
But spree, when you think spree killer, think like berserker killing.
Yeah, exactly. You're not thinking everything through. It's just happening like more spur of the moment as opposed to thinking it out.
So this is where we're really going to crank it to 11. This one's actually really bad. So if you have kids or you have a weak stomach, this is definitely a time to either fast forward about 5-10 minutes or just listen to the next episode. Because I promise you, the next episode, we're going to cover the hero. I'm going to talk about what was found at the scenes, but you're going to hear all the details of what happened to the bodies now. So I'm not going to explain that next episode. I don't feel the need to go over it. I don't need to reiterate how gross and grotesque this actually gets. So I'm going to give you the PG-13 version for sure next episode.
So if you're in your suburban home and you're like, you know, prepping chicken for dinner or whatever, and your little 3-year-old is hanging out and, you know, playing with her little horsey or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. So go ahead.
Shield those ears.
Yeah. Take your...
Put in your little earbuds or whatever.
That's right. And at the end of the sentence, turn it off. Here we go.
Boom.
Here we go. So the spree killing actually only took about 45 minutes total. Now, this 45-minute time frame is actually what put Chase into people's nightmares forever. He's had books written about him. TV shows have been based on this character, and even films have been based on him. I didn't dive into any of that, but dude, you go down. Once I describe it to you, you're... okay, most recently, me and you have both watched Penny Dreadful.
A little bit.
There's aspects of this that ties into shit that happened with the witches in Penny Dreadful. Like, there's little things that he's done that people have... there's... Here we go.
Get to it. Yeah.
Now, Evelyn Miroth, okay, a 38-year-old single mom, divorcee, who lived with two sons, Vernon, who was 13 years old, and Jason, who was 6 years old.
Oh, boy.
They lived in the Country Club Center neighborhood in Sacramento. Now, Evelyn was at home with Jason and her sister-in-law's 20-month-old baby boy. Okay, Jason was getting ready to go play in the snow with the neighbors. Near the foot of the Sierra Nevada mountains. Okay, so at 9:05 a.m., Evelyn's friend, Danny Meredith, showed up, okay, at the house to check on him and hang out and do whatever it is he does. Now, he showed up.
He was a friend. He was like a Kato Kaelin friend.
Yeah, check on his divorcee.
Ron Goldman, yeah.
Yeah, so he shows up in his red station wagon, okay? Now, Evelyn asked him actually to go back out and rent snowshoes for Jason so that Jason can go play in the snow and be able to walk around and everything else like that. Now, after Danny left the house, Richard Chase entered through the unlocked back door. Now, he walked into the bathroom where Evelyn... Here we go. He walked into the bathroom where Evelyn had been taking a bath, shot her in the head, dragged the now-dead woman out of the tub, and laid her out on the bed. Now, Jason, probably hearing the gunshot, entered the room to inspect the noise, where he was actually shot twice in the head at close range. Chase left his body on the floor next to the bed, then went to the kitchen to find a knife. While in the kitchen... he hears the front door, and he happens to walk into the hallway as Danny's entering the hallway. He is met with Richard Chase and was shot straight between the eyes, falls down immediately dead. It's at that moment that Richard Chase hears the cries of the baby in the other room. He walked over to the crib, and just as he had with the first three, he shot the infant in the head. He then returns to the bedroom with two carving knives and began to cut away at Evelyn's body. Now cutting open the stomach from sternum to navel, then a second cut across the stomach. He pulled out the intestines, stabbing at specific organs, and again leaving only the kidneys. He took out the liver. He cut off a piece and ate it. He pulled out the rest of the organs and collected as much blood as he could at the time. He then rolled Evelyn over to her stomach. He stabbed her anus 6 times, and then he sodomized the wound. He then rolled her back over.
So he was banging the punctures, essentially.
Yeah, yes.
Wow.
He then rolled her back over, sliced open the neck, and cut out one of her eyes. Now, feeling his work with this body was finished, he went into the baby's room, brought the body into the bathroom, split the head open, and partially dumped the brains into the bathtub. At that point, there was a knock at the front door. Now, the family across the street that was waiting on Jason had actually sent their little girl over to check to see if Jason was ready. And so the daughter went to the house to check. Luckily, Richard did not open the door. Instead, he waited till the little girl had left. Then he stole Danny's keys to the station wagon, escaped somehow unseen with a bucket of blood and the baby's body. The crime scene would be discovered by a worried neighbor 30 minutes later. All right, so that's the note we're going to end it on. Next week we're going to record the next episode.
Juicy baby details just yet, huh?
Yeah, so...
My stomach's turning, sir. Thank you for that, by the way.
I took myself there and left it, man. It was a very crazy research portion. I wasn't anticipating this episode going as long as it was. I wanted to actually, give you the details correctly so you can truly understand how messed up this person was. Like I said, there's no sympathy for the actual killer. It's more or less, there were so many ways that they could have fixed it and they didn't. Now, next episode. So this episode, you've learned what Renfield syndrome is. You've learned what the Cotard delusion is. You've learned the difference between process and product killer. You've learned how the system truly worked in the 1960s and 70s. You learned how parents acted. We also explained the McDonald triad to you. There's been a lot of educational value in this episode outside of the grotesque, and that's what I want you to take away from it.
It's so funny when you see both ignoring and ignorance in the same breath.
And
it's nuts.
And also we explained the difference between spree and serial killer. Now, he like Fuego goes, only six? You could see why those six were so, I don't want to say epic, but gruesome. I mean,
I mean, you don't want to use a term like style or something, but like just the extent of the nastiness that you employ is what makes you notorious. So,
and there was absolutely no empathy. Like, he felt nothing the entire time, except for
being cognizant of how messed up he was.
The fact that the killings happened so fast is what fascinates me, because what he would do post-mortem is insane. But the fact that he just wanted the body. He just wanted, and the thing about it though is
that just means he didn't want to deal with any aspect of interaction with victims before.
But you also got to figure,
because there's some people who I would assume get off on seeing the reaction of being tortured and that sort of interaction.
And we'll cover
and there's
those
others
people,
who are just like, no, I just want dead flesh to mess with, as opposed to seeing a human reaction, and that's just different calibers of being messed up. So
now, next episode is also going to be slightly educational. What we're going to cover on the next episode,
these are all educational, sir.
What we're going to cover on the next episode, Ray
Chris
Biondi
is the research guy, guys.
So Ray Biondi is
The next episode, but the next bit we're going to cover.
Biondi is a, because
these are all
beast.
two-parters.
Yeah, so the second part, Ray Biondi is a beast. He's actually the one that catches Richard Chase, and the funniest part of the entire story is the actual capture, but I'm going to save that. It's fucking hilarious. Now, next episode, we're going to cover how it is certain branches of law enforcement were getting their funding in those days. And even to this day, FBI and local cops, stuff like that, they don't exactly interact. They don't actually there's a lot of information and evidence withheld because they want the collar, which is the arrest. That's how they get their funding, by arrest rates.
I always think of South Park, where he's like, this investigation's under our jurisdiction now, but that's not fair. And they start fighting over it. And
so have you seen the documentary on Netflix, Evil Genius?
I've seen some of it, okay. I want to say. Shout out to my homeboy, Lou. He's really into true crime, just like you, man. He puts that stuff on at work at the hotel, and people are just like, what are you watching? And then there's some who sit down at the bar, and they're just like, ooh.
So for those of you who have actually watched the Evil Genius Netflix special, and if you haven't, watch it this week. So when you hear the next podcast, you'll be like, oh, I know exactly what he's talking about. They could have solved that crime prior to any of the evidence being missing, prior to any of the people dying off, like a whole bunch of stuff, because the FBI and the local police wouldn't work together. Talk, and withheld information. Yeah. It just never got solved.
It's like a rivalry aspect. It's like a big brother situation of sorts, and which is stupid if you ask me. But it makes sense from a monetary standpoint and from an ego standpoint too.
So. Yeah, I mean, even law enforcement within our government, you know, the CIA and the FBI, they withhold information from each other.
It's insane. They're just different branches. They're considered more on a respective level, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah. I can't say that I know exactly what the Federal Bureau of Investigation handles in comparison with the Central Intelligence Agency.
But the interesting part about Ray Biondi, and we'll cover this next episode for sure, is that he actually got his profiling experience from the FBI, but he was never a member of the FBI. So it's actually really cool how it happens. But we'll get into that. He's just a really good detective.
You have
really
baited my interest, and hopefully,
he's a beast.
Yeah.
But he gets screwed over in the end. We'll cover that later. But anyway, thank you guys for stomaching through it with us. Like I said, this wasn't This wasn't supposed to be torture porn. This was just supposed to be informative. You can't.
I switched from beer to coffee, dude, because I was just like, like this is unsettling me. Just
I don't think you can know the level of his diagnosis and his psychosis without knowing the degree of gruesome that he went to. I think that was for information wise, for education wise. I think that you had to know what he was willing to go do.
I can concur with that. I think the importance of the arrest escalates when you see the atrocity of the crimes and stuff.
Exactly. Now, once again, this is one that I did not click on photos for.
yuck, dude. I couldn't stomach that.
I was just telling Fuego, actually, that I you know, when I was reading the final four murders.
I asked you on the phone. I was like, wait, there's photos? And you're like, oh, yeah. It's not like I looked at any of them, right?
Yeah.
probably looked at one and were just like, okay, nope.
Yeah,
nope.
That's exactly what happened, actually. Just wanted to get a picture of his face, and then you do that thing where, like, you scroll down, like, oh, shit, and then you get off.
Yeah. Right?
So, anyway.
This isn't where I parked my car.
Thank you guys so much for hanging out. And if you actually went the full thing with us and you took it to 11 with us and you were hanging out, let us know and we will find a way to reward you, whether it's following you on Instagram or giving you a like on Facebook. You know,
Twitters, whatever.
That's right. You interact with us, we'll interact with you. We're very fun, loving, open guys. So
yeah, and if you are interested in us turning it to 11 in a different fashion, we are in a band called Chiron, Chiron. You can find us at reverbnation.com/ChironBandAZ. We have two of our upcoming studio tracks, and then we also have a old demo, Evil in You. You heard that at the beginning, and we'll hear it here at the end of the broadcast. So.
Yeah, and if you'd actually like to hear, you know, full songs, let us know. We'll be more than happy to play it at the end of every episode. That way you guys can still get your episode in. You're not having to listen to us.
Give us some feedback. We appreciate it.
Again, thank you for the numbers climbing. You guys have been amazing. We've been watching the metrics, and you guys are coming in troves. And it's amazing to see that this thing is growing and people are actually getting curious. And eventually we'll find a name for you guys. Right now I'm thinking about Brofilers, but that's very...
There's lots of ladies one-sided, I know exactly. Who are into this sort of sick shizzle. So
I don't want to type anybody just yet. So co-profilers at the moment, I guess we'll go with, or
we'll figure something out.
But thank you guys very much again. The email, if you guys have any case, we're gonna be in the 70s for a while. So if you guys have any cool cases that aren't really well known in the 70s that you want to hit us up with, our email is centertainment@gmail.com. We'll check that. For sure, if you guys have something you want to hear us portray, we'll do it to the best of our ability. Outside of that, facebook.com/ChironBandAZ. I am Omega Twiz 5150 on Instagram. Fuego.
You can find me on all social media sectors, just Jaime and Fuego. It's spelled kind of like Jamie, but JAIMEENFUEGO. That spells Jaime and Fuego.
Yeah, so without further ado, you beautiful bastards, thank you guys for hanging out. And you've been amazing, and this has been Profiling Pain. So we'll catch you on the next one.
Peace out, yo.